Hello, everyone. I'm Louis Vargas, and you're listening to episode 52 of the Art Scene Podcast. Today's guest is Oakland Bay artist, graphic designer, and member of the newer art collective, Lenworth McIntosh, also known as Junebug. You'll hear us discuss his background in starting his own clothing brand, his graphic design work, and his eventual foray into the fine art world. We also discuss the recent solo show he had at Part 2 Gallery and the new mural he painted alongside Fox Theater in Oakland. But before I play our conversation, I wanted to plug a couple things. As some of you know, some places in the Bay Area are starting to reopen, such as outside dining and places of work. Museums and art galleries are starting to reopen as well. SF MoMA, for example, has a newly installed David Park exhibition, which runs through January 21st, while the De Young has a Frida Kahlo exhibit that runs through February 21st. I also know that some galleries are allowing visitors to come in, but by appointment only. Either way, support your local arts by either visiting one of these places or buying art from the many local artists that exist in your neighborhood. All right, now here's my conversation with Junebug. Thanks for rescheduling. I didn't expect the first cancellation. Baby came a week early.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's all good, man.
Yeah.
How's the baby doing?
He's good. He's just chilling. Yeah. I mean, it's just like so different when you're at, you know, I'm still working from home. And so he's just around all the time, which is great. Like, cause you don't miss a minute, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool, man.
But thanks for doing this, man. Usually I would do this in person, but with pandemic, we gotta have to settle for this these days.
No, it's all good, man.
So I wanted to ask you, I know you go by Junebug, but your real name is Lenworth McIntosh, right? It's one of the...
Yeah, Lenworth McIntosh. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Where did Junebug come from? Like, what's the origin of the name?
So it's kind of evolved over the years, actually. I guess, like, so Lenworth McIntosh, I'm a junior, basically.
Oh.
So I have my father's name. And for a long time, like, my father was never really in my life.
Okay.
So for a long time, I despised that name.
Yeah.
And my mom, I mean, to this day, she still calls me junior. And so for, I would say, most of my life, I went by junior. I still go by junior in some circles. But I was in undergrad, and I was going by junior and then also going by Lenworth in, like, the professional sense in class and all sort of stuff. But then I met this guy, and we were roommates for summer. There's just a whole household full of, you know, like, athletes from another campus. And he just was a really Southern guy, and he just always called me Junebug. And, you know, I kind of, like, it grew on me. I've had people call it before, but it didn't really register until he started calling me that, because he just kind of had, like, a Southern drawl to it.
Yeah.
And I just like how it sounded. And then everybody he introduced me to as Junebug would kind of, like, create their own version of Junebug. So there would be, like, a nickname on top of a nickname.
Yeah.
But I saw how, like, that solidified my identity with these people that I was meeting. Like, they basically, like, met me, but then they also, like, developed a certain fingerprint for me. You know, like, they kind of got, like, an experience with me, and then they tied that experience to their own version of my nickname.
Yeah.
And so it kind of became, like, a really good way to remember who I was. And then, you know, kind of coupled that with the art, it was kind of like a Junebug that could draw and then kind of, like, their own version of that, you know?
Yeah, that's really cool.
And then, like, yeah, and then, you know, on top of that, there's usually a Junebug somewhere in someone's family, especially, like, if you're Black and from the South. So it's kind of like a nickname that is already in the diaspora. So, you know, it was like piggybacking off of that. And Yeah, I guess it only kind of gets weird when someone's like, yeah, I named my dog or my cat Junebug or something like that. And you're like, yeah, all right, cool. you know, and most people think I'm born in June. I was born in May. And I developed, like, the Junebug as, like, I'm just going to spell it J-O-O-N-B-U-G versus the J-U-N-E-B-U-G.
Yeah.
And just thought it was, like, the June... I've seen June and like reminds me of Tune, and I draw like, you know, cartoon June, you know. So yeah. I was just trying to like marry it more to the art world as much as I could.
I love that you even added like your own like backstory. Like, you know, like you mentioned, like everybody else has, there's an origin for why different people call you that. But then now you even added your own to it.
Yeah, yeah. It made it feel much more like, you know, tangible and memorable to me.
Yeah. For sure. So, nice, dude. Yeah, I totally can relate to that. My name is Louis, and it's spelled L-O-U-I-S, but I'm like Mexican, and so my mother, so like my parents did name me Louis, L-O-U-I-S, but it's named after my grandfather, who changed it from Luis to Louis when he came to America from Chile on my dad's side. And so what's crazy is but my whole life, my mom, my dad, my brother, sister, they call me Louis, like not Louis, like as a big nickname.
And it's, I see.
And even my cousins who like mostly speak Spanish, they don't call me Louis or Louis. They call me Luis, right? Because it's like the Spanish interpretation of it.
Right.
And then you get, and then I get, you know, then when I'm like in high school and college and have friends, they're calling me Lou. So there's like three different groups of people in my life that call me different things.
It's kind of wild, man. Because sometimes you run into that intersection too, where you're around all three of those kind of folks,
yeah,
and they're all calling you different things at the same time, and they're all right, you know. Because I've been in instances where it's just like, you know, I'll have people come to my art shows, and it's kind of cool because they come to me in like when they met me, you know. So they come and call me Linworth, or they come and call me Junebug, or they come and call me Junior, and you can kind of see like the moments in people's faces when they hear the other name in the vicinity of what they think they know me by, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yes. I totally know that.
It's kind of cool, man.
Yeah, like the people who call me Lou are mostly college friends, and their version of me in college is a lot different than what my family, you know, like at home knows me as Lou.
Right.
You know, and it's funny when they all meet. And my family's just like, oh, they call you Lou? And like, yeah. And then recently my dad got in the habit of calling me Lou because he just like started reckoning. He was around enough of my old friends. But then I was like, nah, don't do that. My, like, like it feels weird. Like,
yeah. Mom calls me Junebug sometimes, but I'm so used to Junior that kind of like this alien kind of thing, you know, when I hear it sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know it's like one of those things where they're trying to like assimilate to the growth that you've gone through.
Yeah.
But there's something nostalgic about just hearing something that, especially if, you know, coming from family that they've called you their whole life.
Yeah, for sure.
So it feels like that's something like you can kind of have a backbone on, like, oh, okay, cool. When I'm at home, I feel like Junior, you know, and
yeah,
you know, those other personas kind of disappear. And
right. Yeah, that's true. So you're based in Oakland, right?
Yeah. Oakland with the red orange sky at the moment.
Yeah, it looks like Blade Runner, like a scene from Blade Runner.
Yeah, man. And it's funny because I mean a lot of people are freaking out, but to be honest, man, it's like a double edged sword. Like it's, you know, because of the fires, of course. So that's kind of like disheartening, but then from the cinematic art side, I'm kind of loving this, especially like as a photographer, like all of this just feels so cinematic.
Yeah.
And it's like I wish I had some friends that I could just like shoot with right now.
Yeah.
That I could just take some portraits in this light. But you know, yeah, Oakland is interesting.
And are you originally from the Bay Area or? Are you like moved here?
I moved here. I moved here 2014, September 5th.
Oh, sweet. Where from?
I moved from Dallas. I spent a lot of my life in Texas. I would say like from middle school to maybe like 5 years post-grad. So yeah, that was like basically 2000 till 2014. So yeah, about 14 years.
Yeah. What made you, was it, and you, I'm assuming you, so you went to undergrad there as well then?
Yeah, I went to undergrad at this private college called McMurray University. It was in West Texas, Abilene.
Oh yeah, a small liberal arts college.
Yeah, yeah, man. So I was out there for 4.5 years.
How was that experience?
A little bit more.
How was that experience for you? Because I went to one like that too in San Diego. I grew up in San Diego. And even through undergrad, and then spent, you know, a couple of years as an adult afterwards before I moved here. But I went to a small liberal arts college. It was the University of San Diego. It's small, like 3,000-4,000 kids, whatever. But
yeah,
how was that experience for you?
It was pretty cool. It was very different at first, you know, because I was so used to the big city.
Yeah.
But at the same time, used to a smaller city than Abilene, because where I was born and grew up before I came to the States was Jamaica. And so I was used to a very tight-knit community. And then I came to the States and, you know, living in Dallas-Fort Worth area first. I just kind of got used to the bigger city. And so when I went to undergrad, it was like the smaller city. And it was like Texas, so I kind of experienced some West Texas Bible Belt, you know, kind of, like a West small town country life, but not, it.
But like not on the campus, right? Like itself, like it was like outside of the campus, or was it on the campus too? That
it kind of it was like the surrounding area was kind of close knit to the campus itself. I feel was Methodist, and I think whenever I chose a college, I wasn't really thinking about like religion like that.
Yeah.
And so when I went, it was, I guess, the most freeing of all three universities that was there, because there's three universities in a very small city. There's Abilene Christian, and there's Hardin-Simmons, which is Baptist, and mine was Methodist. And so a lot of the, like, we didn't really have a curfew like all the other universities. So I guess my time there felt more free than like, I guess, the word I'm looking for. I guess more free than not, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like it was encouraged to kind of indulge in the religious aspect, but it wasn't like a requirement. Yeah. More so.
Yeah. That's exactly how my school was. Mine was a Catholic school. And it, you know, there's a church on campus, you know, there's like priests, you know, like walking around, but like, wasn't it in your face? Like, it wasn't like, oh, you have to go to church. There's no curfew, you know, yeah. If you were upperclassmen, you could have alcohol in your room as long as you were 21, you know, like
yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we definitely couldn't do that. We did, but we didn't.
Yeah.
I don't think we're allowed, you know. But that's cool, man. So in San Diego, you're born exactly where?
Well, funny enough, I was born in Guam. So my dad was in the military. So I was born in the island of Guam. And then I lived there till I was 3. And then we got stationed in California. And then from there, like, moved different places, like Florida, like Tampa, Florida, and then like, you know, then Japan, and then back to, and eventually, like, by the time I was like 9, we finally moved permanently to the San Diego County, and then just,
oh, wow.
And I just stayed there, and that was like 95 96.
You're in Tampa, you said?
Yeah, Tampa. There's an Air Force base that's in Tampa Bay called MacDill Air Force Base. And it's like down the, funny enough, it's down the street from like the Buccaneer Stadium. It's like not even that far from there. And I lived there, must've been like 4 years, maybe. Like my sister was born there, who's like the youngest of us three kids. And so,
that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, and because of that connection, because we have family, like we have friend, not family, but we have like family friends there. And, so we would like do summer road trips from San Diego to like Florida. And my grandparents, my dad grew up in New Orleans. And so it was close. So, you know, my mother was the one that was like from Tijuana, Mexico, you know, and then one of 10 kids, they all live in the San Diego area, Tijuana area. That was part of the reason why we moved there. But yeah.
So like, a lot of seasoning in your life.
Yeah, dude. Right. Like it's a, I mean, it's a longer story for another time, because it would take like hours to explain my whole like crazy family history with just my parents alone. San Diego, and I grew up in a small town in the San Diego County area, like not even downtown San Diego. So like when I went to that, it's always fun to meet other people who went to small liberal arts private schools, because I'm curious if their experience kind of matched up with theirs, especially with you, because you, like me, also stayed kind of local. Like you didn't go out of state for college. Even though I lived nearby, like I felt like I was an out of state student at this university. And I don't know if it was just like the religion behind it, and then like the private school part of it. So obviously like it brings like different types of students from out of state or from other parts that are a little bit more privileged than I did. So I'm curious, because like I don't find a lot of them. Everybody usually says, oh, I'm from Stanford, or I went to Cal, or I went to UC. You know, I don't find a lot of small liberal arts schools.
That's interesting. That what you mentioned about kind of other type of students coming in. That was something I noticed as well. It was like, you know, I looked at, like, you know, when Facebook first popped up, I think it was like 2005-ish or 6, something like that. I got to get a glimpse of other campuses, other universities, and I would look at the public ones, you know, like the major universities, and I'll just see like so many like kids, like so many students, and so like all these different programs and stuff, and sororities and fraternities and all this other stuff. And like, I was like, oh, is that what the college experience is supposed to be, you know? And my school didn't really have the sororities or the fraternities. We had like social clubs, I believe it was. And so it was like our version of those things. And it was just kind of interesting to just kind of see that, because you're like, oh, you know, these are like the big student bodies where, you know, you're more of a number than a name kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's actually was the case, but that's kind of what they, you know, told us. I don't know if it was to make us feel better, you know, about like just the smaller classrooms and stuff, but that's kind of what I believed. I was like, oh, okay, well, every time I see my professor, they ask me how I'm doing and what's going on in my life, and actually like generally want to understand me more.
Yeah.
And, you know, even from that, like the art advisor that I had that was also my art teacher, I kind of credit a lot to him helping me kind of see potentials and where I could go with my art, and not necessarily like just, you know, telling me to take these certain classes. But like through different conversations and just bringing me into his family, I felt like I was able to start seeing other things through that experience. So there's a lot of good that I experienced just going to a smaller college in a smaller town, less distractions, stuff like that.
For sure. What did you end up majoring in while you were there?
I did Bachelor of Fine Arts, I believe. Yeah. So I did, it was mainly graphic design. And what I liked that he taught me was able just like to take my traditional drawings and transfer them to the computer and then figure out a way to bridge both worlds where I didn't sacrifice, you know, one of them.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like that was the start of my mission to develop a certain style or a certain voice in my work that was more about balance than just kind of the extreme.
Sure.
So I learned how to just take the drawings and make them digital, but still feel like hand drawn.
And so like when you, so then was graphic design, like when you decided to do graphic design, was that like, were you thinking that was like the practical part of having like a fine arts major? But you were really, your heart was more in the fine art part, or was it a marriage of the two that you really enjoyed?
To be honest, I had no idea what I wanted to do in high school, like in the sense of like a title.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember I had an art class and there was a list in the art class of all these different jobs for artists and how much they made, you know, per year kind of thing. And I saw graphic design and that was the highest amount on the list per year, money that it made. So I was like, oh, I'll just do that, you know? Because it's like that whole broke artist kind of mentality that I had back then. I was like, I don't want to be a struggling artist, you know? I want to like attain some sort of like financial stability at some point. And let me just go for the job that, you know, has this projection of this high amount of money. And so when I went to undergrad, that was on my mind was like graphic design. Didn't really know anything too much about fine art. I didn't know like the differences on like fine art, graphic design, you know, all these different things. So I just took all these classes that my professor advised me. And through those classes, I kind of developed a certain sense of what I wanted. And I wanted something that didn't box me in. And so I did the fine art degree with graphic design, but I also felt like I was starting to see that graphic design was all encompassing and not necessarily needed to just be one thing or one pathway. I think I took that and learned that it was an open field and I could grow with it and I could kind of go whatever path I wanted to.
Yeah. And then, as this graphic design major, and you mentioned drawings, was drawing the only medium that you were kind of into, or because you mentioned also photography earlier?
Yeah, I drawing was my first love. I think that was the first thing I could see with my eyes and then create with my hands.
Yeah.
And through that degree, there was a part of it where I took like a photography class. And throughout high school, I remember like seeing people take photography and I was like, that don't look all that cool. The kids that are taking it aren't that cool, you know, and I was much of a follower in high school. So, but whenever I took the class in undergrad, you know, I had some friends that were taking it. So it kind of like convinced me to take one and then I took it and I fell in love with it. And my teacher at the time told me I had a good eye for seeing things. And so I kind of practiced with it. And then digital took over. And I remember our film store, the only one that we had in town, closed. And this was like before I understood like the internet to like order offline and stuff like that. So I just kind of put it down for a long time.
Yeah.
But always seeing things in the frame. and taking a lot of inspiration from photography to create my art elsewhere, like drawing and painting. But I think when I look at it, it was more about my eye and the first thing that was occupying or helping me translate what I was seeing was drawing and design. And then as I kept growing, I started picking other ways to translate what I was seeing. So it was the photography. But yeah, it just kept growing.
And once you're done with undergrad, what was next for you? Like, what did you, like, was it once you got out of school? Because you said you stayed in Texas for a little bit longer afterwards. Was it like you just went right into it, like to try and get like either graphic design work, or you went into like making art? Like, what was your next step after that?
Funny enough, I didn't want to work for anyone. I think I got to the end of it, and I was so adamant about having this passion to do this, but not work for an agency where I would have to crank out a lot of it and get burnt out. And that was a real fear of mine, just like losing the love that I had for this by forcing it. Forcing it for someone else. So at the end of, or towards the end of my undergrad, I came up with a clothing brand idea called Fresh Coffee, and I actually came up with it while I was working at McDonald's, like my last, I guess, month there. And I called it Fresh Coffee. A lot of people kept coming in asking for Fresh Coffee while I was on the job. And it just kind of snowballed into this brand idea. And I used my graphic design knowledge to kind of flesh it out as best I could. And, you know, I had all these like quirky ideas, all the shirts smelling like coffee, packaging coffee bags, all this like fresh stuff. And so I was like, yeah, I want to do that. I want to like expound on that. You know, it's something that I can call my own. It's something I have full autonomy over. Let me work on that. And at the same time, I was kind of shopping my artwork around. So I was starting to get these small one-off jobs of people wanting like album covers or flyers and stuff. And so it was like mixtape, album covers, and flyers. So I was still very much in the music scene.
Yeah.
And doing that on the side while trying to make shirts and sell those. And so I eventually got a couple other jobs too, just kind of more like labor intensive jobs. So I was working at car washes off and on.
Sure.
And I felt like those type of jobs didn't really involve much of my thinking capacity. So I feel like I was in like autopilot while I was thinking of creative thoughts and what I was going to draw when I got off the clock kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I would bring my sketchbook to the job, and on my breaks, I would draw things. And, you know, so that was kind of my thing. I was like, I was working, I was getting money, doing these jobs that didn't require my creative ability as much. And on the breaks, and as soon as I got off, I was back on the creative tip. And so I found that as a nice me doing something else that's sustaining my life and me doing something that's sustaining my future. So I just kind of did that and then eventually moved back to Dallas. And then I started grad school the next year. And so I was in grad school online, going to the Academy of Art.
Oh, really?
Here in San Francisco?
Oh, I didn't know that you could do it online.
I didn't know that either. And they kind of got me because they explained, like, because I told them, like, I had this interest of going and studying more about the fashion world because I just had this fashion company that I started.
Yeah.
I didn't know too much about fashion, so I was like, I want to do something where I can kind of get, you know, the gist of how to run the business, how to like keep it going. And I started taking fashion merchandising at the master level, and I was like, this is kind of crazy because I'm just going off this bachelor's degree right into like this fashion business degree, two of which are super foreign to me. So I'm like double time out of my element. So I did that and from like 2010, I believe. Yeah. I graduated 2009 and I started grad school the following spring. And they told me like, hey, you can get the financial aid from the fall of 2009 as well. So you'll get double that in the spring. And so I was like, oh, okay, I'll jump on that. And I used that money to kind of fund more shirts for the clothing brand, you know? So yeah. I was like, okay, if y'all going to give me extra money, one, I'm going to like get my living situation good. And then also put into my brand, also get a car finally, you know, all these different things.
Right.
And I ended up moving back and then kicked in my mom for a little bit and kept doing these like traveling shows. I would just put all the shirts in my trunk, go to these vending shows, set up shop, also put my sketchbooks out and kind of like fish for, you know, different types of work.
Yeah.
And that kind of started being my thing for, I guess, the next 3 years or so. And I just started developing more and more friendships and more like, I guess, a rep with people knowing that I can draw, but also have this clothing brand that smells like coffee. So I was kind of like in this certain zone of being a crowd favorite, a memorable person, and a talented person, you know, and also in grad school at the same time. So I became like this juggler, because I would do my undergrad, I would have my laptop everywhere, and I would just do my undergrad stuff. You know, the modules end every week, and you know, the test at the end of the week. So, you know, I would spend that week kind of like doing my stuff on the side, then working on the shirts, then trying to get projects going. So it was kind of like a three-step process at the same time.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, you're actually like inadvertently getting like real life experience too while you're at it, right? Because that is life, right? Where we're as adults post school, like you're juggling a billion things, right?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, I don't think that all they do is kind of like go to school and then that's it. Like, I think they struggle a little bit more when they come out because they don't know how to juggle a million things. And you're like inadvertently doing it because doing things that you like to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of like that beautiful struggle of like, yeah, this is going somewhere.
Yeah.
So eventually it will like teeter out. And I was still kind of even working those car wash jobs again. There's something about the car wash I felt like was therapeutic for me because I was like,
yeah,
I was left to do my own thing and no one really bugged me. And then I was tips and it was kind of like the whole time I'm washing cars and thinking about ideas, you know? And so it was kind of that thing where it was an autopilot job for me.
Oh, I totally know that. When I graduated from undergrad, I worked at a pizzeria and I did that for like a year. And it was because I always knew I wanted to go to grad school. I just didn't know what and how. And I remember like that was my time every day. I would open up the store at 10 a.m. and then be there till like 9 p.m. every day. And all I would do is just hand out a slice, take some tips, maybe, you know, get some tips. And that was it.
Exactly.
And I just like maybe clean a table. But like my mind was like, you know, I could just be standing there for 3 hours straight and nobody comes in. And all I'm doing is just thinking about what my next plans are, writing it down in a notebook.
Yeah. It's like the incubator. Yeah. Like the, you know, and you get a little money on the side.
Yep.
In your case, some food too. So it was definitely like that, man. It taught me a lot too. You know, it also made me a machine in a way.
Yeah.
Which, you know, kind of contributed to a lot of the success, but also stresses that I endured and, you know, used to think like, oh, I'm staying up till the sun comes up, and thought that was cool, yeah. knowing that it was kind of destroying my body over time.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, it was like that addictive rush. You couldn't really stop as much as you wanted to. You just end up being like 3 a.m. in the morning. Yeah, a lot of those things, they're just part of, I guess, the road to creating and getting to a point where you're happy with your stuff.
What eventually brought you out to the Bay Area?
It was the grad school.
Oh, really? So instead of doing it online from Texas, you decided to just come out and physically do it?
Yeah, because I got to a point where I was like, dang, I'm not really learning anything. Or I'm not like, nothing's sticking because this is not my field. And for me to just learn it online, there's just something that I valued of being in person, staying after class if I didn't understand something, talking with my professor about it until I got it. That wasn't there. It wasn't present. It was just me, like, on my own. And, you know, the time difference, too, like, being 2 hours ahead of California. And then the whole idea of, like, my professor has a life, I have a life.
Yeah.
You know, and that just, it just was never really adding up to I needed help, and you could give me this help when I needed it. You know, it was always like, let's plan this. And then you're like, oh, the module's ending this week, you know, in 2 days.
Yeah.
And, you know, I sent you a message on Monday, but you're not getting back to me until Friday. And, you know, I kind of understand, and now I'm memorizing for this quiz, but I don't really know it. It's just more so of a memorization.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of got tired of that, and I was just like, I want to experience the campus life.
Right.
And I actually attempted twice to come out here. And the first time I had to go back because of money, and I told myself, if I made it back, I would just stay here no matter what.
Yeah. And so then you make it out here. So what then happened? Like, how was campus life? Like, how much did that influence whatever you did next with your work? Because it sounds like so far at this point, you're doing mostly design, you know, and like graphic design work. Right. And so what influenced you more to do more with your work?
Well, so while I was in Dallas, I did more growing with the work. I became friends with this guy named Arturo Torres, and I guess who I was listening to this podcast.
Oh,
kind of a big deal now.
Oh, I know who this guy. He does work for. The way I've heard about him is he's done illustrations for Shea Serrano's books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were friends. We still are friends. But we became friends, I think, in 2011 or 12. It might have been 11. No, I think it was 12. No, it was 11. Anyway. I remember I was at an art show, Art with Magic show. And they were the ones that kind of put me on too into the scene, like doing art shows and putting my paintings and stuff. And when I met Arturo, I was still just doing drawing. I was just like large scale drawing. I didn't want to touch painting because, you know, I always viewed painting through the eyes of my teachers in high school, which they kind of can do painting like this Renaissance type realism stuff, and I kind of, you know,
landscapes, so, portraits.
Yeah. So when I met Arturo, he was painting different kind of things, and his paintings looked fun, and so we started hanging out more, and he would show me how to paint, like just kind of the basics on how to kind of take my drawings and paint those instead of just trying to make it look all realistic all the time.
Yeah.
And just teach me more about, you know, colors with paint and acrylic and, you know, just just the whole basics of that. And I would help him with like Illustrator, because he was very much a traditional artist.
Yeah.
And I had traditional, but was still learning and developing my style in like the digital realm.
Yeah.
So I showed him what I knew, and he showed me what he knew. And so we benefited from that. And then we kind of, we made a little duo, painting duo, and we called it the Co-Workers. And we would do live art, and we would just do these, we would show up at whatever places hired us, and we'd just do a live art event. And it would just be us two collaborating in real time, improv. And it was so improv, like, we didn't know what we were going to do until we actually got there. We just got there late. So anticipation was always building. And then, like, we would just get there, and we just look at each other, and we're like, all right, I'm going to make the first stroke, you make the second stroke, and then, like, we'll just figure it out. And it always turned out really cool, you know, and it was always a performance piece, and folks enjoyed it. And it was just, I don't know, it was a good time where I learned to paint. And then getting better at painting, added that to my repertoire and stuff.
Yeah.
In my book, I was already painting, I was drawing, I was doing design work, and I had the clothing brand. All those things didn't really have anything to do with what I was studying in grad school, except for the clothing brand.
Yeah.
But I got here, I tried, and I basically met the same fate as I met the first time. Due to money, because they basically said that I could stretch out my online program until I finish. I could take a minimum of 2 classes per year, per semester. And so I was like, oh, I'll just do that. And that was my hustle of like, I'm going to do that. And then the excess money that I get from refunds, I'm going to put into my brand, and I'm going to put into like, you know, my living expenses, and just make sure I can kind of like stay afloat to keep doing this art shit.
So like, so now you're like, instead of going to like physical classes every day, you're still living in the Bay Area, but now you're just doing them online, which is right. Is that right?
No. So what I'm saying is like, because I did that, from their suggestion.
Yeah.
Whenever I came here to try to take the physical classes, they're like, sorry, you maxed out your loans.
Oh.
Because you did this route. And I was like, oh, I wouldn't have done that route had I known, you know, that would have maxed out my loan. And it was my last year.
Yeah.
I think I had 1 semester left of 2 classes, which was like textile and my what do they call that? Your last project to present. I forget what they call it. But it was like the lasting thing of your whole tenure of that program.
Yeah. Your thesis?
So I was like, damn. There we go.
Yeah,
my thesis.
Yeah.
So I was like, damn. So I have 1 class and my thesis left, and you're asking me to pay out of pocket.
Yeah.
With that, you know, and my private loans, I wasn't getting those. So I was kind of like, all right, you know what? I'll just come back to this. And I just left. And I stayed here instead of going back.
Yeah.
I had a spot to stay. I had a couch to crash on from a friend of mine in Texas. And she had a cousin here, so I stayed with them on a couch for like $500. And I made it from there. And I was like, on the couch, I got my computer and my art supplies shipped from Texas. And the rest was at my mom's house. It's basically like, work from the couch. Every day I would go walk down like to, I was in the Sunset area of San Francisco, and I walked down to like 9th Street and just kept walking every day back and forth to the house, getting out, seeing the world, this new place I was living in, trying to make friends. And eventually my roommate, and he started working at this this record packaging spot in the city. They were just like packaging recordings from like old band shows. And I worked there one day, and the one day that I worked there, these guys were moving upstairs, and come to find out, like, they were moving into the where Craigslist started. So it was like the space above our space was where it started, and they were moving in there. And they were like, "Hey, if you guys want to come up after work, we're new here, and we're having like a little get together, so y'all should come up." So I looked at him and I was like, "I'm definitely going," you know, because I was just more of like opportunist. So if something came up like that, I'm like, "All right, well, I don't have anything else that I'm going to do after work. Let me just go up here and do that." I had my sketchbooks on me like I usually do, and I went up there, met the guys. There was a startup from Japan and the city, and there was like a busload of folks that came from Japan to do some work here, some students. And so they had all these different programs and software that had developed, and they were just kind of like almost like a trade show, if you will. And so there was one person that developed a software that if you dropped an art piece in there at the press of a button, it would start to colorize itself.
Wow.
So I was like, "Oh," and everyone was looking at my sketchbooks. So I was like, "Could you color this one?" And so we scanned it and put in the software, and everybody grabbed it around, and he pressed the key, and then just started, you know, the color started kind of bleeding into the piece. And I was like, "Oh, this is really cool." You know, someone had a VR system. So it was like crazy just to like be working there. And then that landed me a little project with them, the startup. And I ended up designing a t-shirt for their conference in Japan. So I was like, "Oh, I have a first t-shirt design in Japan now," you know, because of this, you know, kind of serendipitous moment. And then that also led me to getting a space in their attic. So they're like, "Yeah, if you want to come down here and work anytime you're free, you're welcome to. And we have like some space in the attic. You're welcome to our kitchen or whatever." So I'm like, "Oh, I'll just do that instead of staying at home."
Yeah.
You know, so now every day I had a place to go to downtown and, or, you know, in the square kind of thing. And so I walk down there every day and just stay in the attic. And then one day I was in there and I noticed that across the street, a coffee shop was about to open. And I saw that it had Gold Leaf on their window. And I was like, "Oh man, someone knows about Gold Leaf," you know, and I was kind of geeked. So I kept watching it. And then one day I just went over there and they had like a soft opening. I walked in and I met this guy named Eugene and Dave. And we ended up hitting it off like right away. And that led to having a pop-up with my Fresh Coffee clothing in their space for their opening, you know. So it was like two brands that were new to the area, yeah, opening at the same time.
Yeah.
And then what made it cooler too was that I was getting interviewed for from Sprudge, that that online coffee blog.
Oh yeah.
And they were also getting interviewed for their grand opening. And so my contact was in Dallas, was a former homie of mine. So he was interviewing me, but he didn't have any photos of me. And so the photographer that was shooting the coffee shop, I asked her if she would shoot, since they're working for the same company. And so she shot some extra photos with me, and we both posted to the blog at the same time. So we had these waves of people that came through and like, "Hey, I saw you on the blog. I saw them on the blog. Y'all are in the same space. You know, what do you have?" And so I had everything set up. I was selling shirts that smell like coffee and little coffee bags. And it was like the whole works plus the actual coffee shop.
Yeah.
You know, we did that for a week. And so in that week's time, I made a lot of friends and landed like my first official like Bay Area gig for this company called Burma Bear. And they're a Burmese food truck. Or street food, yeah, that food, yeah, truck at first. And so I developed some work with them, and then that led to more publicity for me, and then that led to, like, you know, more projects. Then I eventually moved out of the space in San Francisco, lived in Sonoma for a little bit, then moved to Oakland in 2015, and then started doing more work. And then folks in Dallas thought I was doing work here, so I started going back and forth to Dallas.
That's so crazy, dude. Like, that's like it's definitely like a story you tell people about, like, not ever like giving up, like where you kind of just like, yeah, it's just like you just keep hustling, like you get what you can and you keep going, right? Because I think so many people always want to find like the perfect job, the perfect gig, right, that they think will then open all the doors. But you took like even the smallest door because you knew, like, if I took, I mean, that's all you needed, right? Like, it would lead you to the next one and to the next one, and eventually, like, it will work out. You know, like, I think it's like you took every opportunity that you could. I think the other thing too is that you weren't shy about asking people or going up to people about what they were up to, because that story about seeing the coffee shop out your window, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't think I would, I think I'd be too shy to like go across the street and be like, hey, what's up? Like, but you weren't and it worked out. It helped. It led you down to like a gig. It led you to a gig, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely some moments where I was just like, man, this is crazy. Like, had I not been in this space at this right time, like, you know, this probably wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Or it would have happened differently.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just those little things, man. It's the little glues.
Right.
You know, it's not necessarily like the huge bridges, but it's like the little beams, right?
Yeah.
So
when did the fine art stuff start coming in? Because I know you recently had a show at Part Two Gallery that was titled Self Error. Was that like your first solo show here in the Bay Area?
In the East Bay, yes.
Okay.
I had a solo show at First Amendment in the city, right, and they're affiliated with Part Two, so it was kind of like through Part Two, but getting my feet wet with First Amendment. And so that was kind of the first show. I think that was like 2018. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think February 2018, something like that.
Because you're still doing graphic design work to this day, but it's interesting. I've noticed in the last couple of years, you've become more active too in the fine art world, in that you're showing at galleries, and then you're also part of the New York Art Collective, right? Which was formerly the Black Male Collective. And so, that's like there's a lot of fine artists in that group that, like Musée. And, which, by the way, you're like now the third person that's part of this collective that I've interviewed. I actually had Soleil, Summer, and Musée on here before, not knowing that you were all part of this collective.
Wow. Yeah, it's crazy. Because my first solo show was in Texas, actually. It was the 2014, on my departure out of Texas to California.
Wow.
And that was like the first Landmark show. And then when I got here, I just was like, oh, I kind of like doing these shows. I kind of like painting. So let me do more of these. Moving here, I kind of saw more and more like this is the route that I wanted to go, started meeting more people. Ace, the founder of Black Male, now Noor, I met him. He was one of the first, if not the first artist I met here, like 2 weeks after. I basically just opened Instagram one day. I was like, I want to learn how to paint murals. And he was one of the first people that popped up in the discovery. And he was painting a mural, you know, and I was like, oh, and this guy looked cool. So I was like, yeah, do you want to link? And then we ended up linking. And then the show called The Black Male Musée was one of the core members. So it was kind of like, yeah, that's another serendipitous kind of, you know, small beam leading to another thing to build a bridge kind of vibe.
Yeah. How is it being part of the collective and like, and being around other artists? Because you're all, the interesting thing about all of you, which is really great, is that you're all into different things. Like, you're not, like, there isn't just like only a painter in that group. There's like, you know, everybody has another medium that they're also into or exploring. But you have like, you know, you yourself, you do photography, graphic design, and painting. You know, there's other people that do illustration design and tapestry. There's people who do writing, some of them do curating. So how is it to be around a group of people like that, that is just so eclectic in their mediums and in what they like studied and what they practice.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. it really is amazing, because not only do they bring the talents to the table, but they also bring the personality and the education to the table, you know, and just like the nuance of being human. So there's been a lot of growth, a lot of tough conversations that no one else sees.
Yeah.
That I feel like have been the most beneficial for us being in a collective. The family aspect kind of goes above everything else. You know, these people don't feel like they're just in the collective. They also feel part of me. I feel part of them. And it's nice to just see that there's different ways to create. There's different perceptions of the world. There's different understandings of what art is and what art can be. And just even just having different gender roles and the conversations that come from that and the art that comes from that. It's just mind opening. You know, you're just like, every day something, you learn something. And I feel like we've grown so much over the last, what's it been like? 6 years, 4 years, 5 years, maybe 5 years. That it's just been beautiful to watch and to witness and be a part of. So yeah, I think it's amazing.
Yeah. And what's, you know, let's talk about your work a little bit, because, you know, speaking of like eclecticness, like your work, after hearing everything that you studied, everything you got into and all the gigs you've done, this last like 5 months, like shows all of that, you know, like in May, June, you had like a solo show at Part Two, which you just mentioned. You did a mural at the Fox Theater. And then you did a collaboration with like Hella Creative, which was like graphic design work, but like work. And I think it was like you did a series of prints, and then I think you did clothing too, right? For them, or like shirts or something like that, like for their Hella June 18th campaign that they did.
Yeah.
In less than a year, like you've hit every part of work that you like to do. And that's impressive. But one of the things I did want to ask you was the Fox Theater mural. So I wanted so when I saw your mural, I wanted to mention this to you, and I wasn't sure. I mean, let me know what you think. But so the work you did and the figurative work in there, it really reminds me of this artist Ernie Barnes. And the thing that came to mind was the famous cover art he did for that Marvin Gaye album, I Want You. So I have to ask, like, what was the influence for, and you know, in that mural, it's not just in that mural that you did that type of figurative work. You did it in the solo show too, and the recent solo show, and you're still doing it right now. I seen you on Instagram doing some paintings and stuff. And
yeah,
what was the inspiration for that work?
I think it's been a whole life accumulation in an experience. I feel like growing up in Jamaica, I've witnessed that type of art where it's kind of like this dance hall culture art that's, you know, about movement, seeing it on walls, seeing it on flyers and stuff like that. And then reading different books in different types of art from like the 1930s, like the racist art, like Popeye, like a lot of those I feel like attributed to how I'm creating these birds now, and thus like a strong sense for them being voices through movement that symbolize the kind of soul as a diaspora as a whole, and just kind of spirits and just, you know, kind of exist ridicule, judgment, all sorts of cages, I guess. And then Ernie Barth, yeah, like that definitely drew influence for me, because I saw that within the figures and just like the loose, fluid movements. And I also dance as well. So, you know, movement, and I love colors. And so I just feel like it's the one style that speaks to the tenure of my life thus far, you know, and it's simple. And I think that's what artists, you know, my favorite artists like Picasso, oh, yeah, in the sense that not necessarily just because of his work,
right,
but in the sense that he kept doing these different periods and moved on. And also, you know, that whole concept of now, if you're in the third period, you have two other periods under your belt. So you could fuse those into the third period if you choose to, right? So every time you move along, you're bringing something with you from the past, and that's adding to your style and adding, you know, taking away. You're kind of reflecting on what needs to actually be there.
Yeah.
So it's like a stone getting polished for me, and I feel like the birds are like my polished stone from doing all these different styles over the years.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that just feels so natural to me, feels so easy to me.
Yeah.
But there's still a challenge in conveying the narrative correctly.
Yeah.
So it still keeps me on my toes, but it explains so much about myself. So, yeah, it's just right. And music a lot, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Vibes that I want to create.
Well, it's funny you say that, because, like, that was the other thing about your work. And, you know, I just talked to Bizet about this same thing too, which about his work, but yours is the same way, in that just like how you mentioned Picasso, when you do a project and you do the next project, there are hints maybe from the previous project, but you do something completely different. Like, you're not afraid to just experiment. Like, you're not going to do the same old thing over and over again every time you do a new project. You're going to mm-hmm. do something different. And you're right. Picasso, I mean, at the end of his life, he was doing pottery work only, right? And he had never done that early on mm-hmm. in his life. But towards the end, he was just like, I'm tired of painting. I'm just going to do pottery work, you know?
Right.
And some people weren't fans of it, but, like, give credit to the guy for, like, not really caring what people, you know, people didn't want. People wanted the greatest hits. He didn't want to give them the greatest hits. He wanted to still keep experimenting and creating and doing something different.
Right.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
You know, because it's you create art for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily just you're supposed to be like this machine for everyone else.
Right.
You know, it's a therapeutic practice, at least for me. And I love the idea that you can get energized by seeing my work and can feel something from seeing the work. You know, but I want to feel it first. You know, I want to be able to, like, I love when I draw something and I can't stop looking at it, you know, and it's not even that it's drawn exceptionally well. It's just the feeling is in it to where I can't take my eyes off of it. I keep thinking about it. I keep seeing it move on the page. You know, I keep hearing it. I hear all of the qualities of the work. And it's just me, you know, it's just me that I'm hearing. And to me, that is when I know that I'm worthy.
Yeah.
Just being able to, like, see it, interact, and move off the page.
Yeah. That's great, man. So before I let you go, and thanks for mm-hmm. coming on again, tell me.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Tell me what's to come in the future. What future projects can we look forward to seeing?
So I'm on this path to creating financial stability, right? And I think, you know, I'm 33 now. Am I 33? Am I 34? One of those. I don't care. but, like, I'm definitely more aware of future found or a foundation for the future than I was when I was in my 20s, right? Mm-hmm. And so right now I've seen the beauty of collaboration, and I love to just create, and I want to just be the creator, you know. And so now I'm partnering with other friends that the other side of it. So now I'm working with my studio mates to do my printing, and then I'm going to be announcing that I'm signing with Part 2 fairly soon.
Congrats.
Thank you. So I can create these works, you know, and keep creating, and not necessarily get bogged down by the back end of things.
Yeah.
Partnering with my friends at Tiny Splendor to do other prints at Irrelevant Press for doing other things as well. So it's working with friends now, rather than doing things by myself.
Yeah.
And I have some prints dropping soon. I'm researching with Fresh Coffee. I haven't put out prints in a while. And I've been on a good hiatus. I've been learning. I've been observing. And just fine-tuning what I want to say with the brand going forth. And I'm ready to, like, come back out with stuff. Maybe, like, show stuff off again. Yeah. And then I'm also working on a collaboration with this company called Part of the Plan. We're coming out with some limited edition sweatshirts. So I'm really excited to see those. And yeah, hopefully we're starting we're in the very early stages. Working as a family, like my family in Jamaica, and me working with coffee, because my grandfather used to grow coffee where I grew up.
On the way.
And so, yeah, so it's wild because it came full circle, right?
Cause yeah.
I grew up in coffee fields as well as other types of, you know, because I was really into the country when I was growing up in Jamaica. So my grandfather grew everything. And so that kind of formed my perception of nature and the world at a young age. But yeah, I'm excited to, like, build with my family there and start growing coffee as well as other things, and start making that international, I guess, financial stability with them down there.
Yeah.
So I think with my graphic design and my eyes for things and products and with production down there, we can kind of build a stronger foundation of the family across.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that sounds like a perfect collaboration. It's been, I mean, coffee has played such a big part of your life at every step, but because I feel like at three times of this part of your, of this story of the last like 10 years of your life, like coffee has had an influence in some way or another.
Yeah. And a big transition that I'm doing next year, early next year, is I'm moving to LA.
LA.
I've been in almost 3 years now. Long distance relationship with my partner. She's also an artist as well, a great one too, I'm a big fan. And it's just getting to a point right now where I'm just like, yeah, the whole long distance thing, it's a bit played out for me. And the closer we grow together, the more it's just going to be a better situation to just be in the same city, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Well, and, I mean, LA is a fun art city right now too. So I know a lot of people here have been moving to LA. For art reasons only, you know. So, like, I think you'll do all right there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've developed an understanding of how I move in new places, because I've moved so many times in my life that I kind of know my own pattern and I know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, I can kind of predict that. So I know I'm going to be okay in LA, and the thing about this is I'm really, and I want to move to LA, which is like, you know, like a grown man kind of move where it's like, you know, I have my own space and I'm able to build out things that I like in that space. I'm able to like afford a really good space. I don't have to compromise.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like I'm building up my own financial stability to be able to move in a way that suits my level that I'm at right now in my mental space. And so I can be there and feel good about just myself and having the things that I've needed in my life, but I haven't really gotten until this point.
Yeah.
Provide for stuff like that. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Transition.
Yeah. Well, good luck with the move, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. And good luck. Good luck and down there. And dude, I'm happy for you. This is great.
Thank you, man. And where are you again? Like, you're in
I live in San Francisco. Yeah, I live in the Richmond district. Okay. Yeah, like I live on like 21st and Clement out there. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wait, so you've been to the Richfield then?
Oh, yeah.
At some point, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I did over there and the menu and the mural that's on there.
Yes, I did notice that. Yeah, man. Like I said, coffee. Coffee's everywhere.
Yeah, it's at the coffee shop with the gold leaf that I had mentioned previously was Eugene, and that was Snowbird, and then Eugene started Richfield.
Oh, that's right. You know, so, Snowbird is the other location they have. I forgot.
Yeah,
about that.
So that was the first location, and Richfield came
after that. Oh my god. Yeah, my wife. I'm not a coffee drinker, but my wife is, and so it's all over my apartment. Like she loves it, and so when we go to the Richfield, I mean that's why we go. But I go there because I love the egg sandwiches when I get there. So
yeah, wow, that's crazy. Yeah. Small world, man.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, even smaller world. I didn't even know that you knew Arturo Torres like that. I only knew because I follow Shay Serrano, and I only knew of him because I follow Bill Simmons' podcast stuff, and he's on that all the time.
Wow.
Yeah, and then Shay Serrano plugs Arturo all the time because he does all the drawings and the works and the PDF stuff that he does.
Yeah,
and that was like so. That's I don't think you're right. I don't think like outside of that, I don't think people would know how big of a deal he is, right? Like unless you're a fan of all those like works, like in those books and stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Proud of that guy, man.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it. And hopefully we're able to meet in person before you ever move. But if not, you know, good luck with the move. And hopefully we can stay in touch. Like I'd love to have you back on even if you're in L.A.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
Yeah, great. Sure.
Link up at least at Richfield or something like that. You know.
Yeah, for sure.
So, thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. All right. That's it for today. Thanks for listening, and thanks again to Junebug for coming on. Be sure to check out bugs87.com to learn more about Junebug's work and projects. You can also follow him on Instagram at thebugs87. Be sure to also visit the podcast website at artscenepc.com, where I'll put up links and photos related to my conversation with him. You can also listen to past episodes of the podcast. All right, till next time, everyone.